This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Ecotopia, where we'll be discussing urban sprawl as well as the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act.
Money makes the world go around, so world go around, so world go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck, or a pound, a mark, or a pound, a buck, or a pound. It's all that makes the world go round, that clinky, clanky sound can make the world go round. Money, 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 money. If you happen to be rich and you feel like tonight's entertainment, you can pay for a gay escapade. If you happen to be rich and alone and you need a companion, you can ring
ding-ling
for the maid. If you happen to be rich and you pay your left for your lover, and you moan and you wrong quite a lot, you can take it on to gin, call a car, won't begin to recover on your 14-car yacht.
What?
Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes up. Go around, all that we both are sure on being poor.
Money, 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 money.
This is KZFR 90.1 Chico, and you are listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological.
This afternoon, we'll be talking about efforts to stop Chico urban sprawl. We'll talk first with Grace Marvin. She's the conservation chair of the Yahi Group of the Sierra Club and a member of Smart Growth Advocates, which has been opposing urban sprawl projects for the past 4 years.
Also with us is Jared Geiser. He is a member of the Butte Environmental Council's Advocacy Committee. And in that position, he was strategic in his response to the draft EIR of Valley's Edge, a proposed posh urban sprawl project in East Chico. Jared Geiser is a certified California naturalist and a local advocate for climate action and environmental stewardship.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Neil Yellen, a financial advisor with Edward Jones in Chico. No matter where you are in life's journey, Neil can offer guidance and strategies for wealth and retirement income, college savings accounts, estate and legacy plans, charitable giving, and more. For a consultation or more information, you can reach him at 530-345-8913. He's on the corner of 3rd Avenue and the Esplanade. Neil Yellen, Edward Jones, member SIPC. Ecotopia is also made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by J&J Automotive in Chico. With over 19 years of experience in auto repair and scheduled maintenance, specializing in Subaru and Volvo, J&J provides everything from manufacturer-suggested vehicle maintenance to all types of repairs, including transmission and engine repair, brake and suspension, tune-ups, lubes, filters, lights, and more. To book an appointment or for more information, visit jnjautomotivechico.com or give them a call at 530-891-3328. And we'll remind you that the opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily reflect KZFR, its staff, programmers, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. We'll take a short break, be back to talk with Jared Geiser and Grace Marvin.
Full of selection.
electric, contagious. It's fleshy, erotic, and voracious.
This is KZFR 90.1 Chico. You're listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. We're going to speak for the first 20 minutes or so with Jared Geiser. He's a Butte Environmental Council Advocacy Committee member. In that position, he was a strategic in response to the draft EIR for Valley's Edge, a proposed posh urban sprawl project in East Chico. Jared is a certified California naturalist and a local advocate for climate action and environmental stewardship. And by way of full disclosure, Susan has also been involved with this effort.
Jared, yeah, well, slight change of plans, because we couldn't get a second line to Grace. So we're going to be talking to you first. So welcome, Jared.
Okay, we're having a few more phone problems.
Jared, can you hear me? Okay, we'll try a little bit more music, and I will try again to get Jared. Okay, thank you.
Hey. same life for everyone, you say. In all my years, I have never known this day. Same life for everyone, you see. In all my years, I have never known this thing.
Okay, we've got the electronics all settled down. We're pleased to have on the line right now Jared Geiser. He's a Butte Environmental Council Advocacy Committee member. In that position, he was strategic in response to the draft EIR for Valley's Edge, which is a proposed posh urban sprawl project in East Chico. Jared is a certified California naturalist, a local advocate for climate action and environmental stewardship. And as I said a few minutes ago, by way of full disclosure, Susan has also been involved in this action.
So, Jared, can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you great.
Oh, perfectly. Perfect. that was kind of annoying. We were going to start with Grace to talk about Smart Growth Advocates, but we'll just start with you about why it was important to become involved in a group like Smart Growth Advocates.
Sure, yeah. So for the past few years and for longer than that, I've definitely been conscious of urban sprawl locally here in Chico and in Butte County. And the way I got involved in it was I actually grew up in the suburbs on a place of suburbia north of Pleasant Valley High School, where there's a lot of vernal pools around there. And I got disheartened and frustrated seeing habitat destruction from new development, habitat fragmentation, as the grasslands in that area were converted into suburban housing, into mostly single-family homes. And then in college, I studied geography and land use planning at Chico State and learned about the myriad of issues with with urban sprawl and the opportunities to plan more sustainable communities. And after learning about some of the bigger issues, I really got excited about smart growth and this way of growing, producing more housing to meet the needs of our community, but without sacrificing the natural resources we hold so dearly, without sacrificing climate stability. And so, yeah, smart growth, I'll just briefly explain what it is. It's really compact design, walkable neighborhoods with range of housing opportunities and choices, mixed land use, and really focusing development towards existing communities and making sure that there's a variety of transportation choices. Because as we know, a major issue with urban sprawl is that the main transportation choice you're allowed is an automobile. That's your ticket pretty much anywhere in the city when you live in a sprawled out area. And so smart growth is really trying to change the dynamic to preserve open space, preserve farmland, preserve critical environmental areas, and develop better communities for the people that live there.
Can you tell us a little bit, as a member of the board of the Butte Environmental Council, what is BEC doing to respond to this issue of urban sprawl?
Well, I am not on the board of the Butte Environmental Council.
Oh, sorry.
And I do not represent them, and my beliefs don't necessarily represent the beliefs of the Butte Environmental Council, but I am on their advocacy committee.
I misspoke. Advocacy
sure.
Committee. Okay.
And so BEC has been engaged in kind of fighting unsustainable sprawl in the community for several years. In 2018, I believe it was, the City of Chico Planning Commission was having public hearings for Stonegate, which is about a 300-400 acre development just downslope from Valley's Edge. That includes the proposition of paving over vernal pools and converting a really, really healthy, sensitive grassland ecosystem and wetland ecosystem into largely single-family homes. And so BEC submitted public comments on that in the EIR, affected community education, you know, reaching out to the networks that Beck had to get people aware of what was going on about the sprawl issues happening locally and the opportunities to engage. And then so this year, or I guess mostly last year, when the Valley's Edge specific plan came out and we saw the city of Chico proposing to develop 1,500 acres of land into, again, largely single-family homes, a prime example of urban sprawl, the advocacy committee, we really dove into the EIR, did really critical analysis, and submitted really extensive public comments. It ended up being 27 pages total, but not only did we engage in that public process that the city was having, we also did community engagement and education. So we did some community workshops to prepare other citizens to submit comments on the EIR and just to also talk about some of the major issues with urban sprawl and some of the great opportunities with smart growth. And so other education opportunities that Beck did with some social media campaigns, educating people on sprawl, some of the issues with it, as well as some of the incredible opportunities for smart growth.
Just to orient people a little bit, can you describe where Stonegate and Valley's Edge are, and what kind of size are we talking about for these two developments?
Sure, yeah. So Stonegate is along Bruce Road in between 20th Street and Skyway. There are several vernal pools there, several wetlands, and I think it's about 340 acres. In between 340 and 400 acres of primarily low-density residential housing. That's Stonegate. And then Valley's Edge is uphill from that in the foothills, but extends much further north. Valley's Edge extends from approximately Stilson Canyon, where Little Chico Creek is, all the way to Honey Run Road, close to Butte Creek. So it's really massive in scale, much bigger than Stonegate, and also much greater negative impacts on greenhouse gas emissions. But both of them have significant and unavoidable impacts in greenhouse gas emissions, according to their environmental review documents, as well as a myriad of other negative environmental consequences.
You did a lot of work on the environmental impact statement for the advocacy committee's response to the draft EIR. What were the most significant things that you saw and touched on in the work that you did for the environmental, in response to the environmental impact statement?
Yeah, I think the biggest issues that I raised were the impacts to the climate. The Valley's Edge EIR includes local climate action plan goals and policies, as well as targets for emissions reduction targets. And then the EIR does all of these weird roundabout ways of claiming consistency with the climate action plan, even though there's clear inconsistencies. Any rational person that looks at it would see, well, if you want to have zero emissions by 2045, and Valley's Edge is going to start operating in 2045, emitting thousands of metric tons of CO2 equivalent per year, that's obviously incompatible. City wants to have zero emissions by 2045, Valley's Edge is going to have thousands of metric tons a year. So I really raised the concerns about the EIR not identifying the inconsistencies with the climate action plan. Other major issues were the negative impact to the wildlife. There's a bunch of sensitive species up there, and so we did some pretty thorough analysis on some of their mitigation measures and articulated how that's really not going to prevent the taking of that species, prevent the loss of the habitat of that species. And then the fact that they claim it's mixed use. The EIR says this is a mixed-use development, even though the land use map, where it shows the different zoning for the site, is all segregated uses. It's almost all low-density residential or very low-density residential a very small higher-density residential component and very small commercial area.
Explain a little bit more for our listeners who aren't into the lingo what it means to have mixed use and why that would make some difference in this kind of a project.
Sure, yeah. So mixed use is a pretty key component of what Smart Growth advocates for. And what it is where you have commercial and residential on the same piece of land. So a good example is having cafes, offices, or restaurants on the ground floor, and then having residential up above. And some amazing benefits of that are the fact that you're able to walk to and from services. You're able to get things that you need to get within walking distance of your house because the commercial is integrated with the residential, compared to what we see in the Valley's Edge Pacific Plan and just about every suburban sprawl project we have here in Chico and in the United States is not mixed use. So you have to drive your car to get to the commercial things that you need to do to get to work and whatnot. So Marcos is trying to really integrate the different uses of land.
And what would you want from the Valley's Edge developer? To go away, to make revisions? What would be the best scenario from your point of view?
Sure, and so I'll reiterate what I said earlier in that I do not represent the Butte Environmental Council.
No, right.
My views are not theirs, but personally, I would like to see an open space preserve. I'd like to see that land rezoned. It's really critical to protect these wetlands. And in my analysis of the EIR, there's going to be hydrologic interruption of those wetlands. And we can't just allow them to degrade all this land, tear up these grasslands, rip these trees out, and build a bunch of homes and roads and mess with these wetlands. We've lost 90% of wetlands in California. And one in three endangered species are dependent on wetlands. And so it's no coincidence, those two facts, because we've lost so many of our wetlands to urban development, like is being proposed in Stonegate and Valley's Edge, as well as other land use changes.
So where does the Valley's Edge project stand right now?
So Valley's Edge, the draft EIR public comment period ended in December. So the city of Chico is looking at the extensive comments submitted by the citizens, by Butte Environmental Council, Sierra Club, and a bunch of other entities and other individuals that care about it. The final EIR will come out probably in the next few months. And with that, the next process will be the Planning Commission holding a public hearing regarding the final EIR. They'll submit it all publicly, and they will address all of the comments made in the draft EIR. And then once that final EIR is approved through a certification of the advocacy, the adequacy of the EIR, then the lead agency, the city of Chico, needs to then make the decision, okay, well, we know from the EIR there's significant and unavoidable impacts to aesthetics from the degrading of the viewshed, significant and unavoidable impacts to climate change from the increase in greenhouse gas emissions. We know that no matter what mitigations are in place, we can't alleviate that. So then they have to make a declaration of overriding consideration, saying that we declare that we're willing to sacrifice greenhouse gas emissions in order to build this development, and we'll be fighting tooth and nail to make sure that they don't do that, because our future is too precious. We're really at tipping points with climate change, and we need to be doing everything we can to increase carbon sequestration, the drawdown of greenhouse gases, not developments that are going to add thousands of car trips a day and something like 17,000 metric tons of CO2 equivalent per year from the operation of it. So it's pretty crazy. And so we'll be working, the advocacy committee and other groups I'm involved with here in Chico, we'll be working to engage the public and see what we can do to stand up to this and protect what's important.
Jared, I'd like to ask a question about the EIR itself and who actually prepares these things. Is this an impartial government organization, a committee of Chico citizens? Who does the research and writes it, and what might be their special interests in preparing an EIR?
So I am no expert on this matter, but my understanding is that the city of Chico is ultimately responsible for preparing this environmental impact report for the specific plan. My understanding is that the developer is required to kind of compensate them for all of the time they spend on it, but there are also several consultants that need to be employed for an EIR of this size. I know DUDEC was pretty integral as a consultant in the preparation of the EIR, and I'm sure there were several other groups involved in analyzing the hydrology and analyzing the geology and the biological resources impact. So it's kind of a big effort, and my understanding is that the developer that wants to destroy the land for a bunch of housing development is responsible for paying for that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the potential is for stopping this development and creating a preserve, for example?
I think there's strong potential. Going forward with it would just be sending a message to all of the young people and all people to come that our future doesn't matter, and that it's really important to build this more unsustainable type of housing arrangement than it is for there to be a reasonable level of climate stability. So I think that we're really at this nexus with climate change. It's beyond the crisis level, and it's really an existential threat. And I think that with well organized public opposition and with a lot of people working together in the community to fight this, to bring up the good points, and to make sure that we get these representatives out that don't take these critical issues like climate change seriously. I think a multifaceted approach could lead to.
And we'll try to find out what it is, but we don't know at the moment. Go ahead.
Okay.
I don't know what that emergency warning was for. I just have a couple of quick questions. I'm sorry that you don't have as much time as we hope since we had telephone battles. We need housing. I mean, I think the argument and the potential overriding consideration that the council could make is we need housing. What should we do?
I think we should do infill. We should do smart growth. We should be creative in how we develop housing. So there's something called the Regional Housing Needs Assessment and Regional Housing Needs Allocation. And they look at the housing needs for the city of Chico. And the city of Chico's housing needs for above moderate income have been met by 150-some percent, whereas the housing needs for low income and very low income and moderate income, those housing needs haven't been met. So when everyone says we need housing, we don't need $500,000 suburban homes or $1 million suburban homes. We need affordable housing. And Valley's Edge simply will not be providing affordable housing. So I would imagine that this Valley's Edge would kind of be a place for people from almost entirely out of the area. A lot of people in Chico can't afford this type of housing. And we already have such a high stock of this above moderate income housing. We need to have more affordable housing. And so one awesome opportunity I see is Park Avenue. There's been people in the community talking about doing some true smart growth. There's already some communities around there. There's already some commercial activity around there. So let's increase the density. Let's have some higher story apartment complexes that are really well designed, that are really elegant, that give people a nice sense of place of their neighborhood and of their community. And put them in a situation where it's a mixed land use, as I mentioned before, with commercial and residential integrates. People can walk down to the coffee shop, walk down to the commons or Mulberry Station or whatever. So I think there's a lot of opportunity sites for infill within the city of Chico. And I think things like ADUs too will play an important role in increasing the housing stock. But this type of development won't alleviate our housing issues as much as it will grow our community significantly.
Thank you so much, Jared. I really appreciate your being with us. Jared is a certified naturalist and climate change environmental activist and has been strategic in responding to the draft EIR of the Valley's Edge project and is a great voice for stopping urban sprawl. Thanks, Jared.
Thank you so much, Susan and Stephen.
Your back on Mother Earth. Down.
With us by phone now is Grace Marvin. She is the conservation chair for the Yahi group of, and I think there she's going to tell us about something about that, of the Sierra Club. And she has been a strategic member of the Stop Urban Sprawl projects that have been going on in Chico. So welcome, Grace. You were one of the early members of the Smart Growth Advocates. Could you say just a little bit about the history and goals of that project?
Hi, this is Grace. I thought Jared did an excellent job of describing the technical stuff that's beyond me sometimes, often. But in any case, I did want to tell you that Smart Growth Advocates, I have notes going back to 2019, though I think it may have been started a year earlier. And we advocate just the sort of thing Jared talked about, which is mixed use housing, growing up instead of growing over large areas of land, having housing that is affordable, having housing on tops of downtown stores with tree-lined streets where people could enjoy walking and could safely go by bike or public transit to schools, jobs, stores, parks, and downtown. So that is the sort of thing that we've been advocating because it is so sorely needed by both our planet that needs to have less CO2 and by people who do not have enough affordable housing. So, and one of the first activities we undertook as part of Smart Growth Advocates was fighting AB 430, mm-hmm. which was an assembly bill promoted by Gallagher. And he wanted to allow, this was shortly after the campfire, to allow large amounts of housing to be built without considering CEQA, or the California Environmental Quality Act. So several of us Smart Growth folks, including Susan, went to the assembly in Sacramento several times to present our opposition to 430, but our arguments were ignored, especially after Gallagher brought in busloads of campfire victims. And it seems to me that defeat of 430 is why developments like Valley's Edge have been proposed. That is, developments not geared to people actually needing affordable homes, such as those campfire victims.
Steve, go ahead.
Would Valley's Edge benefit from that legislation? Would they be underneath it and be able to waive elements of the CEQA process?
Well, yeah, it's clear to me, and in listening to Jared and reviewing the literature that Sierra Club's lawyer produced, that the Valley's Edge project violates CEQA. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they do not live up to the standards and the kinds of protections and the kind of disclosures that are supposed to be involved in developing a project like this.
This sounds like more than just the EIR. What's the Sierra Club's engagement? You have lawyers working on the process?
Yeah, the Sierra Club. Let me first of all say,
yes.
since Susan brought it up, we no longer are the Yahi group. It was brought to our attention belatedly that the Machupta tribe and other Native Americans find it rather offensive for a predominantly white club like the Sierra Club that wants more diversity but has traditionally been white and male to have our group named after a tribe that is essentially not here anymore and that was disrespected by the whites at the time. Mm-hmm. So we have renamed our group. We are now the Blue Oak Group, and we're pretty proud of that new name. So that's why I told Susan I was going to explain why we have a new name.
So it's the Blue Oak chapter or what is
Blue
it?
Blue Oak Group.
Blue
we
Oak
are
Group.
A group.
Okay, of the Sierra Club.
Five counties, and it comes under the chapter that is based in Sacramento.
I see.
And the chapter meetings, which I attend nowadays by Zoom, they are the ones who told me that they would be willing to put money into fighting the Valley's Edge project if I could get enough local people involved and supportive and submit the materials that were necessary. And so that is what we did, and both Smart Growth Advocates came through beautifully putting on a fundraiser at Elizabeth Devereaux's studio. And then also the local Sierra Club contributed money, and so we raised more than $4,000, and so that supplemented the money that the Sierra Club is putting into the litigation that so far the lawyer who was hired, he has spent some of that money. I mean, he's earned some of that money beautifully, and we have some leftover money and the commitment by the Sierra Club more broadly of funding this project because they believe in it so strongly.
So what was the role of the lawyer that you were able to get us through the Sierra Club? What was his role in this project?
His role was basically to challenge the remarks that had been made in the draft EIR by the Valley's Edge project designers. And he found just huge amount of problems with it, many of which Jared has already mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And Jared and Maggie Scarpa, they both worked with Jason Flanders, the lawyer,
mm-hmm.
and so he was fully informed about what is happening here. And we have a joint BEC and Smart Growth Advocates and Sierra Club project going on here.
Is there a lawsuit pending in all this, or will one be filed?
Well, we're thinking that there may well be. That's why it was very important to us to get the support of the Sierra Club, because it has some big pockets, unlike mm-hmm. Smart Growth Advocates and BEC. So by having that money and that commitment, we know that we can do it. And maybe I could remind you of something that you may not know about, and that is that in our area, we had a big, massive project of 4,000 homes and 3 golf courses that was being planned up in Lassen County called the Dyer Mountain Project. And there were going to be 7,000 homes in this beautiful area in Lassen County. And some local people, as well as Sierra Watch and the Sierra Club, spent huge amounts of time, effort, and money. And they won the fight against the Dyer Mountain project, but it took a dozen years of litigating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we successfully fought urban sprawl, where the population would have been doubled and where there isn't even enough snow for skiing.
Yeah. So you're clearly passionate about this topic. What is it about urban sprawl that most troubles you? Why shouldn't we be building houses for people out in this open land? What's the problem?
Well, my academic, civic, and conservation interests have focused on having socially just, diverse, and sustainable communities, and this is just the opposite. So we need more local jobs, social services, and schools, plus clean water and air and affordable heating and cooling. We also need less CO2 and veggie gardens and walking paths and parks and downtown areas that can be easily accessible by bicycles and by public transit. So Valley's Edge represents just the opposite of everything that I believe we need to have in this community. And thank goodness there are many good people who join me in that.
So do you have a specific, I mean, you were, what you just said was amazing. Yes, your description of what things could be. Are there infill possibilities in Chico?
We have talked about infill possibilities with the people living in, with people who work for the city, but it seems that it's the big developers who, with their big money, just as the music was that started this
yeah.
whole program,
yep.
that
I'm glad you caught that.
are able to exert more influence and power than the little guys.
So what do you think that ordinary Chico citizens can do? How what can be done to get them to care about this? What would you ask our listeners to do? What can people do?
I think we first have to educate ourselves, our friends and neighbors about the value of smart growth policies that Jared and I talked about. And we have to require the city and the county to make such policies priorities as demonstrated in the projects they support. And we can find other ways to become involved in improving our community, especially for those who are underserved. We could write letters to the editor, attend civic meetings, promote leaders who support our values. And I think we need to develop a deeper interest in how we can best promote positive changes. For example, there are zoning policies being considered on the state level that would promote smart growth. So I think we should learn about these and get local leaders to support them too. And more personally, some of us can reduce CO2 emissions from cars and delivery trucks by using alternative transportation and by growing or buying locally produced foods and other goods. Finally, I think we can show ourselves and others that we can live happily, but more wisely when we actively support smart growth values.
So what do you see as the future?
What do I see as the future?
Yeah, well, where is this going to go? Where do you think we're going to end up with this project? Can we have the kind of community, do you think, that both you and I envision?
I am hoping so, very much so. And to me, one of the brightest signs are the young people who are involved with these projects, such as Jared and Maggie and Addison and other people who they see this as their future, even more so than you and I do because of longevity issues.
We're old.
And I think that they will keep fighting for it. And if anything, our planet is showing more and more signs to the public at large that we need to fight this with our wild, with our terrible fires and with the amount of homelessness and poverty we have. We've just got to do things differently. And I think that people are opening up their ears to this.
And I'm hopeful, too, in the work that I've done with this project in the past few years, that we continue to attract more young people. I think that we've really benefited from the energy and the commitment of the people that you've talked about who have really dove deep. I'm the English teacher,
both
right?
Work in any case. We're really glad that they have looked at things so thoroughly and are strong advocates for a more sustainable future.
But we also deeply respect your long engagement, Grace. I'm currently on the fringes of a new organization started by Bill McKibben. It's called Third Act, and it's designed for those of us who are seniors who still want to continue to make a difference. And you're a model of precisely that kind of person.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I feel so fortunate that I'm in a position where I can pursue these values and interests, and I feel so very fortunate that I'm able to be involved with so many other people who are living here in the Chico area and want to continue these similar project ideas, that is, more sustainable communities.
Thank you so much, Grace. Our guest has been Grace Marvin. She's the conservation chair of the Blue Oaks Group of the Sierra Club. Did I get that right?
Yes, you got it.
Okay. And is a huge community activist. And yes, we surely appreciate what you've done. Thank you so much, Grace.
Thank you, Grace.
And thank you for interviewing us.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Down to Gonky Park, listening to the wind of change. An August summer night, soldiers passing by, listening to the wind of change.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, technological. At this point in the program, we want to shift gears just a little bit and read a press release that was issued just the other day by Aqua Alliance, the group that is engaged in protecting North State waters. It reads, Aqua Alliance has filed three lawsuits against the Butte, Colusa, and Vina sub-basins groundwater sustainability plans. The acronym for those is GSPs. They filed them in the last 10 days with two co-plaintiffs, the California Sports Fishing Protection Alliance and the California Water Impact Network. The GSPs are the result of state mandates from the 2014 Groundwater Sustainability Act, which requires some protection of groundwater after allowing unregulated use since California's formation. The GSPs encompass large portions of Butte, Colusa, and Glenn counties, and each presents specific threats to the unsuspecting public that is dependent on groundwater and the streams, rivers, and trees and species that are supported by healthy aquifers. Some of the dangerous policies and parameters include within the Butte sub-basin, first, they fail to disclose that groundwater levels will drop by up to 100% of historic range. Two, they accept failure of at least 7% of the domestic and very deep aquifer supply wells. And three, they allow groundwater pumping to increase that will result in stream flow loss from 90 to 277%. Over in the Colusa sub-basin of Colusa and Glenn counties, first, the proposed plan permits the failure of at least 20% of domestic wells in the Colusa sub-basin, despite the requirement under SGMA that domestic wells be given priority. It also accepts the loss of almost 1 million acre-feet of groundwater storage by 2070. Third, it allows unreasonable and undesirable amounts of land subsidence. And the Vina sub-basin, which also includes, is essentially within Butte County, provides parameters that will cause hundreds of wells to fail, yet fails to disclose the quantity and percentage. It accepts monitoring well thresholds that are unreasonably low, including some that are approximately 200% below normal operating ranges. And third, the Vina proposal inadequately mitigates the loss of wells by small farmers and by residents. The lawsuits find many failures in common. Aqua Alliance Executive Director Barbara Vlamis explained, quote, the three GSPs, as written, make it impossible to reach sustainability in the required 20-year horizon. In addition to specific failures noted above, they all identify projects and management actions that are ambiguous and unenforceable. They may cause serious harm. None of them will protect groundwater-dependent ecosystems as explicitly required by SGMA. She continues, despite common knowledge and some analysis, the Butte, Colusa, and Vina sub-basin GSPs fail to adapt to serious impacts from expected climate change. This deficiency alone in the plans leaves them unenforceable and invalid, she added. You can learn more details, go to aquaalliance.net, and you can follow the Aqua Alliance lawsuits in these three sub-basins.
You're listening to Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 in Chico. Coming up in just a moment, Bobby Tryon will be here with Chico Give and Take. She'll be discussing 5:30 Food Rescue with Sheila McQuaid. And at 6:30, Ginger Nichols will be here with music and
her own fiery personality.
She must be 16 because she's driving, but she started doing this with a kid, and boy, does she have a radio personality. So stay tuned to listen to Ginger. You've been listening to Ecotopia. We'd like to hear any feedback about shows, suggestions for shows, people you'd like to hear us interview, questions about any of the topics we've covered. Also, let us know if you have a public service announcement. Steve just read the Aqua Alliance press release. If you have a press release and you want to have it publicly aired, please send it to us. And if it's within the parameters of our of our program, we would be happy to share that with our listeners. You can listen to old shows and check our list of resources. Go to our website, ecotopiakzfr.com. Thank you for listening.
You are the new day. Mother New Day. Send the sun in time for dawn. Let the buds all hail the morning. Love of life will urge me say, you are the new day. Knowing we must bear thoughts occur that this night might stay yesterday. Thoughts that we as humans mourn could slow words and end it all. Lie around me
next is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothing and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. And more information you can get by calling 893-4923, and by The Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3, and by appointment. More information by calling 530-898-9525. I'm Bobby Tryon, and this is North State Give and Take. Today, I am going to interview Sheila McQuaid, and she is the project manager from the 530 Food Rescue Coalition. And I had interviewed Sheila not a year ago, but I don't know, maybe in April last year, where Sheila was working on getting this 530 Food Rescue Coalition going. And Sheila's going to bring us up to date on all the things that have happened and what the 530 Food Rescue is. Welcome, Sheila. I'm so glad to see you again.
Hi, Bobby. It is so great to be back with you. And I couldn't be more excited.